And Now, an original afterword by Orson Scott Card.
Ever since the short story version of Ender's Game appeared in 1977, everybody who's read it seems to have thought immediately that it should be made into a movie. On the surface, it looks like it would make a good movie. There's plenty of visuals. The battle school should be really thrilling to watch. We have kids in duress. It's the kind of thing that we want to see. Plus, you have to realize that in America, film is the highest form of art that the public aspires to. It's one of those things that can be really frustrating to a novelist. People will come to me and say, "Oh, your book was so good, they ought to make a movie out of it." To which I reply, well, why? It's already a book. But nobody gets the joke, or if they do, they realize the irony, but they still want to see it on film. I think because film depicts something that looks so real, what they're really wanting is, instead of having the story exist only in their imagination, they want it to exist in a form that is tangible, in a form that appeals to their senses. In a way, of course, it's stronger in the form of a book. In fact, I think that the strongest presentation of any of my books is the one that you've just experienced, which is listening to them read aloud, so that presumably you can let the pictures form in your eyes without having to have your eyes open and looking at words on a page. Of course, knowing how I listen to audiobooks, chances are your eyes were open and looking at cars on a road. But I hope that this book did not in any way cause you the grief that I was caused when I listened to The Firm on tape many years ago and found myself with that impossible thing, a speeding ticket on a freeway in Wyoming. You have to be going really, really fast. But I obviously wasn't paying attention to either the speed limit or the policeman parked beside the road in plain sight. Anyway, those distractions aside, what people long for when they really love a book is to see it filmed. The trouble is, even something that seems as obvious as a movie, as Ender's Game, really is harder than you might think. Ender's Game gave us fits from the start. Of course, naturally, we had to deal with the problems that are endemic to Hollywood. The first producer who optioned it immediately wanted to change Ender to be 16 years old and give him a love interest, and we had to bring Peter out into space and other things that would have completely destroyed the through line of the story. Fortunately, that filmmaker made a science fiction movie that tanked absolutely. His funding dried up, the option expired, and the film rights reverted to me. At that point, I now knew my lesson. And from then on, I insisted that anybody who wanted to option or buy Ender's Game for film had to have a clause in it that said Ender would not be played any older than 12 years old at any point during the film. Well, they tried, you know, to get around that. They would have that clause, and then later on, hidden away in the middle of a paragraph about ancillary rights of some kind, they would have something that says, notwithstanding any statement elsewhere in this contract, producers shall have full, ability to decide the ages of the characters. In other words, they gave it with one hand and took it away with the other. When somebody tried to lie to me like that, of course, I stopped doing business with them at all. Others were a little bit more forthright. They would have a clause saying that they would use their best efforts to make Ender 12 years old. Best efforts is two guys sitting in a room somewhere in a studio going, what do you think? Should we make it a little kid? Nah, let's not. And that was it. That was best efforts. There's no way to prove what best efforts would be, so the contract would be meaningless. And then there was the clause that somebody inserted that said Ender would be played as 12 years old, give or take 4 years, which, oddly enough, brings him right up to age 16 again, which is what I didn't want. When I asked someone, why do you insist on making Ender's Game, making Ender Wiggin, rather, into a teenager? And they said, well, because we want to get that date audience. Well, first of all, this isn't a date movie. This story doesn't lend itself to that. Second of all, I immediately responded and said, well, what about E.T.? You know, it did great business, and it doesn't have any teenage hero. And they said, well, E.T. was a special movie. To which I replied, let's make Ender's Game into a special movie, too. How about that? There are, however, real problems with working with children, and there's no denying it. First of all, filming is very, very difficult because you can only work children for half days. As soon as they get old enough, you know, if you're going to play Ender at 16, you're going to cast a 25-year-old who looks young in the part anyway, chances are. And you don't have to worry about those state law regulations that make it impossible to work a child for more than half day. But even more of a problem was the fact that we didn't need one excellent kid. We needed about 8 to 10 really good child actors. Now, in the entire history of film, up to about a year ago, when as I'm speaking now, there was no such thing as a Hollywood movie that had as many as two excellent child actors in the same film. This made me very pessimistic, especially during the era when everybody was saying, oh, you should get Macaulay Culkin to play Ender. That, of course, was a nightmare. And each new child actor that came along, as people would say, oh, you must use him as Ender, I would say, no, by the time we get this made, he's going to be too old. He's already too old, because we kept seeing them when they'd already passed that magical threshold. Remember, Ender has to be the youngest looking child in Battle School, except for Bean. Fortunately, about a year ago, the new live-action Peter Pan was released. And in that one, the director, Hogan, had managed to get excellent performances from many children in the same film. Every child's performance was outstanding. The threshold had been crossed. The curse was off. I knew that Ender's Game was possible as a movie. However, there are other problems with the story. The way I write my novels is to proceed almost entirely from inside the point of view of the main character, which means that at every moment in the story, the reader is keenly aware of what the character is thinking, what the character's purpose is, the motive behind every action, the way the character interprets the things that other people do. Film just can't do that. Film shows you the surfaces. All you can see is what's shown on people's faces, and when you have a really complicated motive, there's no face that can show it. The alternatives were to have Ender explain himself, but Ender's not a talkative kid. He doesn't tell you what he's thinking. If you're not inside his head, you just don't know what's going on in there. And so, script after script, as I wrote them, we ran into the terrible problem that Ender's motivations were unclear, the audience didn't identify with him sufficiently, so that when people who had read the book read the script, they thought it was fine. But when people who had not read the book read the script, they just couldn't figure out what all the fuss was about, because the scripts just did not have emotional impact. Now, I was writing those scripts, and so there was always the possibility that it was simply that I didn't know how to write movies. But I've written dozens of plays. I do know how to put character and emotion into a script. And it wasn't working, and I knew it wasn't working, and I couldn't figure out a way around the problem. What were we going to do? Have voiceovers? You know, Ender's walking through the corridors of Battle School, and we hear a voice, his voice, playing, you know, inside his head going, I wonder what Peter is doing right now. I mean, that would just be terrible. The audience would laugh deservedly at such a moment. But finally, salvation came from an unexpected source. Richard Le Gravenez and his wife, Anne Le Gravenez, had been interested in Ender's Game for some time, and they approached the production company that I was working with, Chartoff Productions, with the idea of collaborating, being involved somehow, if only as producers. And in the process of our discussions, my novel, the novel you've just been listening to, Ender's Shadow, came out. Anne Le Gravenez read it and came up with the idea that should have been obvious to me but wasn't. Why not make a film that combines these two stories? I knew at once that Anne was right. We had struggled with the length of the book. It was even cutting out enormous swaths of the novel. It was still running to 140, 150 pages on every draft, and 120, of course, is always the target. But I knew at once that combining the two books would allow me to shrink the screenplay. Adapting one book was taking 150 pages, but the first draft that I tried that combined these two came in at 130 pages, 20 minutes gone from the movie. Why would adapting two books be shorter than adapting one? It was simple. By using both Ender's Game and Ender's Shadow for the screenplay, we were able to externalize Ender's character. That is, instead of it all being inside Ender's head, the way it is in the book Ender's Game, now everything is out in the open between Ender and Bean. And we look at it as a tension between them. In other words, it becomes a buddy movie. And buddy movies are a thing that Hollywood knows how to do. Not just because it's a formula, because it's not really a formula. To say buddy movie doesn't really tell you anything. You can have really lousy buddy movies. But because film allows you to show two people in dialogue while doing wonderful, exciting adventures that seem very real. And that way, you get inside their heads in a way that you can't when one person is just walking along alone. 48 Hours would have been a really dull movie with either Eddie Murphy or Nick Nolte all by himself. You had to have the two of them so that they could talk to each other. And in the midst of their conflict, as their character relationships resolved, they were able to tell us what was going on, what their thinking was, what their motives were, what their reaction was. That's what started happening with the screenplay of Ender's Game. The title will be Ender's Game, but you who have just read this book should remember that when Warner Brothers acquired the rights, they acquired the rights to both novels, and the film Ender's Game, should it ever come to the screen, will owe as much to Ender's Shadow as it does to Ender's Game. So what you've just heard is a book that was designed for its own purpose, has its own history, but by simply existing, and of course with the wisdom of Anne Le Gravenez, it became a project that we have high hopes for. Right now we're still in script development. Just because I wrote a draft that has the emotional impact that that the books have doesn't mean that it's ready to be filmed. I'm working with an excellent director right now, Wolfgang Petersen, that I hope will end up being the director of the film. And we have a great deal of support from Bob Chartoff, whose company, Chartoff Productions, first acquired the rights with the clauses that I insisted on, and from Lynn Hendy, his partner, who has been a champion of this film now for, longer than many children reading Ender's Game have been alive. If the film happens, it will happen because of a lot of people who've worked very hard and made a lot of sacrifices to bring it off. And then when it's up on the screen, everybody will look at it and go, okay, now it's real. Except you and me. You'll know, and I'll know, that the best production was the one you just heard.
We hope you have enjoyed Ender's Shadow, an audio renaissance audiobook from Tor Books. This program was produced by Stefan Rudnicki and recorded at the Skyboat Studios in Studio City, California. Text copyright 1999 by Orson Scott Card. Production copyright 2005 Audio Renaissance, a division of Holtzbrinck Publishers, LLC. All rights reserved.